Heracles said, what you leave behind is not what is engraved in stone monuments, but what is woven into the lives of others. It's the lives of others, specifically how they've woven their legacy into this community, that piqued my curiosity this month. Who are the people who created and sustained this congregation? What are their stories of inspiration that has had them continue here as devoted, sustaining members for more than 25 years? Whose shoulders are we gratefully standing on here in our midst? Since I was called to this fellowship almost 3 years ago, I've been profoundly touched by how deeply committed so many of you are to this congregation. You give so much of yourselves to this fellowship, your time, your treasure, your talents, and your abiding love. You've done this over many, many years, and I've heard inspiring tales about days gone by in our fellowship, some of which you're going to hear in a moment. Meanwhile, I encourage you to check out our art wall next door, filled with pictures and stories of our history. And while gazing at that wall and seeing all the smiling faces looking back at me, I was struck by a strong intuition of what connected these snapshots of time. And what seemed to me to connect them was the discovery of a home, a family for the journey of life, a place where you could find meaning, purpose, and a loving community. Now, for some, that meaning came through being challenged by rigorous intellectual discourse or hearing profound transformational stories from friends or speakers. For others, it meant spiritual or religious freedom and expression, a chance to be yourself with all your questions and seek answers on your own rather than be fed dogma. For some, it meant raising children in a larger, caring, multi-generational community. And for yet others, it was about the spiritual necessity of social justice and walking our talk together in the world. But for most, it meant making lifelong friends to walk through this journey of life together. So whatever their reasons, our legacy members whom we celebrate today have been here for 25 years or more. 25 plus years, can you imagine? I would say that's been a successful long-term relationship. Through good times and tough times, through years of low membership and years in which we had over 100 children in our RE program. Through the ups and downs of living, giving, and learning in a religious community. Now, as many of you know, this fellowship was founded in 1961, in the very same auspicious year that Unitarians and Universalists joined forces nationally. CBUUF was started by families wanting a progressive community in which to raise their children. And though we have no one left alive from among our founding members, our beloved Sue Rosecrans here joined this fellowship shortly after its founding in 1969. And in a few minutes, we'll have an opportunity to hear from Sue and some of our longer-term members to learn what inspired and compelled them to maintain continuous membership here for 25 to 50 years. But first, I'd like to take a moment to recognize all our legacy members. And you'll see their names on your purple insert in your order of service. And I invite those of you present to stand as I call your name so that we may recognize you. Let's hold our applause until I've read all the names, please. So honoring our legacy members, we have Annie Barker, David Barker, Arlene Bloom, Don Cooper, Ruth Ann Cooper, Theodora Davitt Cornyn, Mary Freed, Candy Genka. A lot of them were here at the first service. Pete Hauger. Lorella Hess, someone who's here, yay! Todd Hess, Gary Johnson, Sylvia Flores Johnson, Ed Lathrop, Robin Lindsay, Darcy Lober, Floyd Martin, Mary Martin, Kathy Matthews, Scott McGrath, Jim Metty, Frances Pardee, Sue Rosecrans, Ellen Smith, Nancy Summers, Joanne Van Rienen, and last but not least, Thelma Williams. And now, I would like to invite our panel up. We put the chairs out for them to sit on. So Sue,
yes.
As the longest term member of our congregation for over 50 years now, what has kept you coming and committed through the ups and downs of the congregation over all these many years? Please share with us all. And hold the mic up close.
I came to Newbury Park in 1968 with three small children after a divorce in order to teach school. That December, I found the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. It was a new group formed in 1961, I guess, in Thousand Oaks. This was John Birch area, but these families did not fit that mold. I was welcomed and felt comfortable and have stayed for a long time. UU people were warm, intellectual, and loving. They soon became my extended family. My children also found young people to enjoy, and some of them are still their friends, long friends. Through the 70s and the 80s, the fellowship had its ups and downs. Membership fluctuated and the meeting places moved from place to place. The YMCA to the United Church of Christ Recreation Room and lots of other places. Our meetings were lay-led, mainly members of our congregation, with visits from UU ministers and other people in the area. Sorry, I'm having a little trouble here. Why did I remain with this small group? Because this extended family was involved in all the important activities of the time, of this 70s and 80s time. We protested war violence, marched for meaningful political causes, stood on street corners with placards, expressing our strong opposition to undemocratic actions. The fellowship was stimulated by the Unitarian Universalists Association in Boston, which kept us abreast of the important messages and the work in the wider community. And we played, went camping, had potluck dinners, attended many of the cultural events in the LA area, and shared intellectual stimulation with other UU fellowships. I am here today because of these people whom I met and got to know at that time, and our added membership throughout the years. UU people assisted my growth into old age. Over our principles guided these wonderful people, and they are in the room today. Thank you for being with me.
Thank you. So Todd, you've been here for 31 years with your family. And what is the most important thing that you've gained from being a member here for so long? And what has kept you and your family, your four generations of family, coming for all these years?
So the four generations of family, the oldest is my father-in-law, who's moved here a few years ago. When we came, it was Lorella and me before we had added a couple more generations. When I came, Sue Rosecrans was the age then that I am now, roughly. And this view of the fellowship as one of many generations has been true that whole time, even from when we first came and there were 30 people. We still had representatives across the ages. When Philip was first welcomed to church, he shared a welcoming cake with Joe Eggenberger, who was celebrating her 75th birthday. These generations were connected as well. I mean, one thing that I remember from Jo Eggenberger is how she stayed connected to all the children. She wrote, she sent Valentine's cards, often birthday cards, made many stockings, things like that. So the connections between those generations has been wonderful. Just some specific examples of times I remember my children being embraced and acknowledged in this congregation. Megan made reference to her coming of age story, and her story was an ABCs of her spiritual growth. Randall Edwards asked for a copy of it afterwards. I remember being at Randall's house a couple of years later, and it was still on the refrigerator. Our daughter Allison was encouraged to pursue art, and that has had a very meaningful part in her life. Philip and Henry Lupka were the first people who signed the bridge, that those of you who make the bridging ceremony next week will see. And Mary Fried introduced him to Apricot Lane Farms, where he's now working, as you heard from the Joys. And then we go on to Rockland, who I hope many of you have had the chance to hear from, but when he was very little, our minister, Laura Brandis, at the time, was encouraging us all to say hallelujah when there were exciting moments. And there was some exciting moment, and Rockland says, yay! And then that became the cry for a while. Like Derek said, it wasn't exactly coming for the children, it was coming for the community to help us be better parents. Both to know that our children were loved by people other than their parents, and also that they could see those values. So thank you all for your part in helping raise my family.
So Thelma, you've been here 47 years. And I'm wondering whether you can share how this community has made a difference in the wider world.
Well, as you heard, I joined in 1970. It was a time of great change in the society, but we were still pretty much a me group at that time, pretty inward in our thinking. But as I became more involved in the fellowship, and as I heard great speakers come from other churches, or we went to conventions, or we met with women's groups from other places, I realized that we weren't just a small little Caneo Valley Unitarian Church, but we were a church that believed in many things and started to speak about those things, including LGBT equality and gay marriage and social and justice and the climate control, and so many of these things that we have espoused for so many years started to be recognized by a larger group of people. Our legislators started thinking and listening to us, and we see today that so many of the beliefs that we have followed for so many years are now part of our society, and we really have made a big difference in the wider world in many ways. I'm proud to be a Unitarian.
So Floyd, you and Mary have been here for 42 years, and I'd be interested if you could share a meaningful spiritual experience or what Unitarian Universalism means to you.
When Mary and I joined CVUUF 42 years ago in January 1977, our youngest daughter of three was 1 year old. It was our New Year's resolution to find a UU congregation that we really fully accepted its purpose, principles, sources, history, and its members. In Phoenix, Mary's family was active in the Congregational Church and mine in the Methodist Church. We were married in the Congregational Church in Phoenix in 1964 and joined the United Church of Christ in Simi Valley when we moved here in 1967. From our home in Scottsdale, Arizona. I was elected to various board positions at UCC, including vice president. I was uncomfortable being a hypocrite and saying the affirmation of faith each Sunday at the UCC. In an evening meeting I organized as vice president, we learned that the only part of the affirmation that we all accepted was to find meaning and purpose in life. I wanted integrity for myself and to be a better role model for Mary and our daughters. I chose the following meaningful spiritual experience from out of the many early experiences we had at CVUF to share because of its immediate impact on my whole family and our fellowship. At CVUF, we were lay-led and had a minister once a month that I look forward to. The rest of the services were planned by the vice president and a program committee. As the other vice presidents before me, we would study the newsletters from UU churches and find guest speakers that looked interesting to us. One was Renee Firestone, a Holocaust survivor. I arranged for Renee to give the children's story and sermon. With the children seated in front of her, she showed them her number that was tattooed on her arm. She shared with them how one day a group of Jewish male prisoners were paraded through her concentration camp. Looking through the bars in her window, she recognized one of the young men from her village. And he recognized her. He said, "Renee, are you hungry?" Renee was terrified, knowing that he would likely be shot if he stepped out of line. She did not speak, but nodded her head. Yes. The young man reached into his inside coat pocket, pulled out a biscuit, stepped out of line, and handed it to Renee through the bars, and quickly got back in line. He was not shot. Renee shared with our children that she was from a wealthy Jewish family, and that the young man was from the poor side of her village. She had looked down on him and treated him poorly at home. Renee looked in the eyes of each of our children and stated, "Always treat others kindly with dignity and respect." Being a Unitarian Universalist encourages me to learn and serve with others and to make this a welcome spiritual home where we each can develop, be our true selves, and serve others. There are thousands that share our values that have not yet discovered Unitarian Universalism. I discovered it for the first time in a double-page centerfold advertisement in the Arizona Republic newspaper announcing the merger of the Unitarians and the Universalists in 1961. The ad showed a bookshelf of books saying, "Our religion does not have just one source of truth." That was followed by a long list of famous Unitarians and Universalists that have helped transform the world. I thought, wow, there is a church like this? I pledged myself to check it out someday. I'm glad Mary and I did join 16 years after I read that advertisement. We need to improve our outreach.
So Darcy, you've been here 28 years, and I'm curious how this community has allowed you to express yourself spiritually and be your full self.
I like to work in the dirt. Working in the dirt, pulling weeds, lends itself to drifting off. And drifting off, I begin to muse about the nature of things. Contemplating the nature of things, occasionally an aha moment occurs. When that happens, I get so excited I want to share what I've thought and feel I have discovered with others. For many years, speaking from the pulpit, this congregation has lovingly allowed me to do just that. For these experiences, I am forever grateful. I was raised an agnostic humanist, staunch agnostic humanist. In my family, religion was for the undereducated masses. So you can imagine my surprise when my father sent me an advertisement for Sunday services at CVUUF, knowing that I was a new mother alone, just having moved out here to Thousand Oaks. The topic that Sunday was the effects of El Nino on the human psyche, free childcare available. Adult conversation, free childcare, I was there. Well, 3 or 4 years into just coming on Sundays to rest and listen, Lex Crane, our part-time minister at the time, sidles up to me after service and suggests I go to the 5-day leadership training camp he'll be the chaplain for. There's a $200 scholarship available for anyone who wants to go. Now I find there is some hesitancy on the part of the board to invest in me this way, but I'm given the money and off I go. At the end of that 5-day immersion, I knew in my heart that the ministry was my calling. I could see clearly how all my gifts, as well as all my growing edges, could and would be brought to bear in answering that call. To share our lives' wisdom with others in song and dance, poetry, prose, to ritualize our desires and understandings of life and drive those good messages home, well, what a wonderful way to spend one's time. Thus inspired, I sent away for materials to apply to Star King Seminary. But later, in earnest conversations with my husband, we decided that even though I might feel I wanted to give myself to the world at large, my little family needed me more. So I never did go to Star King or any other seminary. But meanwhile, wanting a return on the $200 they had invested, Dennis Weir, the president of the fellowship at that time, asked me if I would champion a fund drive to buy what is now the Gray Hymnals, and thus the choir was born. Then he decided we needed a more spiritual approach to Sunday morning, and so he renamed the program committee the worship committee and asked me to chair that. For 3 years, I chaired that worship committee along with 13 other intrepid travelers like Lorella Hess and Francis Pardee. And we put together services on the weeks Lex was absent from the pulpit. After Lex came Jack, after Jack, Betty. Working together to create these meaningful worship services, exploring themes we could all be passionate about, well, I can't think of anything more satisfying to be doing. The depth of creativity held by the people who have made up the backbone of this fellowship is truly awe-inspiring. And now, even though some of the faces have changed, that creativity and willingness to adventure remains as inspiring to me today as it ever was. Thank you.
Well, I came to the fellowship in 1971, and the first thing I went to was a potluck at Sue Rosecrans's house. And one of the wonderful things they had was strawberry shortcake. And I still think of that when I think of Sue. Sue and I had a lot in common. We were both teachers, we both had young children, and we were both looking for an extended family, and that's what we found in the fellowship. But it wasn't just an extended family. For Sue especially, it was a way of showing her respect for other people and to show her deep convictions about non-war. And we all stood on the street corners and we did things to make other people realize that there are other than the John Birch people in this area. Sue was a steadfast member of the fellowship, willing to do everything and to keep us going. And because of that, we should all be very grateful that she's still here and she's setting such a wonderful example for all of us.
And Sue, we would like to present you with this special CVUUF chalice. And this is the chalice that we give to all our new members when they join. And we have some of them in our midst here, and we'll have a new member service on June 2nd. And we wanted to connect you as our longest standing member with our new members to tie us all together and present you with one of these chalices. And thank you for your 50 years of love and devotion to this congregation. Thank you. So, I invite our panel to take their seats now. And I invite us all to rise in body or spirit to join us for our closing hymn.